Our joke today comes from Ryan Lorenzen.
I see. So when it's your turn to write the joke, you rely on our listeners to provide.
Hey, don't look at me. Okay? They are the one who gave it. I just know how to ask nicely. Where do snowmen keep their money?
I guess it's appropriate joke considering most of the Northern Hemisphere this time of year. Fine. Where do snowmen keep their money?
In a snowbank.
That doesn't seem very secure.
It's a pune, Brian, or play on words.
No, I mean, anyone could just reach into that snowbank, take the money out. Besides, what happens when it melts?
Are you implying that a snowbank could suffer from a financial meltdown?
I suppose if you really pile up the snow in a really big snowbank.
It's too big to melt, Brian. Too big to melt. In all seriousness, Ryan, thanks for the joke.
Did you know he has a blog at sfbullet.com?
Wait, hold on. Are we plugging his blog, Brian, for free?
Well,
Really?
he did submit a joke. Anyways, we have a great episode today.
We do? Wait, you're not going to say it's a special episode?
Well, it is. This episode is the first episode this year without Parker
Ah!
Harris.
Ah!
What?
No. No, Brian. No Parker Harris jokes. Let's at least start the year without doing the exact same joke we always do.
Fine.
That's it?
That's what?
You're actually going to let it go?
Sure.
No jabs, no snide remarks, no veiled attempts at getting a Parker Harris joke in anyway with different wording, just fine?
You asked that we skip it.
Oh. Okay. All right. Cool. Is it just me, or does this feel weird now without one?
I think it's just humor.
Huh. Okay. Well, moving on then. Where were we?
Well, I was about to say, Happy New Year's, Mark.
And to you, Brian. Wait. It's a little bit late for that, don't you think? It's February. Is this actually a January episode that we forgot to release or something like that?
No. It's February 8th. It's the Lunar New Year. Gung Ho Fat Show, Mark.
Okay, indeed. As it were, do we do New Year's resolutions twice then?
Only if you want to.
Whew, okay, good. I do not need two sets of resolutions to ignore every year. So what are you doing to celebrate?
Well, first, I'm going to apologize to my ancestors, particularly my great, or not my great, my grandparents, for probably butchering Gung Hae Fat Choi, which is, Happy New Year. In my family, if we were near everyone else, we would actually go out and do dim sum or something like that. I particularly always like try to get mooncakes. You ever had a mooncake?
What's it made out of? And I could tell you.
Well, mooncake is basically a pastry, and
Okay.
it tends to be full of red bean paste, which is kind of, it sounds disgusting if you think red beans like the type of beans you might find in chili, but it is a sweet
No. Yeah,
bean.
yeah,
Right.
yeah.
Well, this is for the listeners who may not know.
Okay.
And so it's kind of like having a cake or a cookie. What I particularly like about it is you typically don't find them all year round unless you're like in touristy parts of Chinatown. Sometimes you might get like a dehydrated yolk that sits inside the cake, which I've never particularly care for the textures of those. But I love the moon cakes just in general. It has tendency a very thin pastry around the red bean, and it's usually very decorative with various writings or other things on them, and they're a little oily, but just tasty. Very tasty.
Are there any like events or anything in your area?
In Sun Prairie, no. Maybe on campus down at UWM there might be some, but
You're not going to anything then. You're not going to actually.
I am actually working on making my own bao.
Ah. Nice.
I've been experimenting for the last 3 weeks on different dough recipes and different fillings, and I found a place online that Amazon that would sell me the bean paste,
Whoa,
which I
whoa,
haven't
whoa,
actually
whoa, whoa.
tried yet.
Whoa. You're getting your
Yes.
bean paste from Amazon?
Well, technically, probably from another store that
All
sells it through
right.
Amazon.
All right. That's it. Dishonor. Dishonor on your whole family. Dishonor on you. Dishonor on your cow.
Look, it's either that or I have to drive all the way to downtown Madison with three screaming kids in the middle of winter to get to the Chinese grocery. Okay? It's just ain't gonna happen.
Kind of dedication you have to have, Brian.
It is, but no, it's a 30-minute trip one way with no traffic and no road problems. So no, I went to Amazon and I bought the bean paste. I made my own pork filling, which smelled really good, did not taste very good. So I'm experimenting, and hopefully it turns out well. I learned something new. You can't actually get that brilliant white pastry, like what we get when we go to
Yeah, the place in
Hangai Tea Room. Yeah, down in San Francisco. You can't get that brilliant white pastry without a special type of flour. Because if you make it yourself at home without that type of flour, like just all purpose, it kind of comes off yellowish in tint.
We've got
So,
a local event here we're gonna do, actually.
really?
It's a group doing an event. Yeah, so they're gonna have like a dragon parade and a lion troop and all sorts of things. So
I'm jealous.
yeah, it'll be fun.
I'm a little sad because both my grandmother and my grandfather are passed on, and every year I would get lucky money
Oh, the red envelopes, right?
the red envelopes. Yeah, I actually have a couple here that my grandmother put together for my kids right before she passed away,
Oh, that's cool.
and and I used to get some from her sister, which I thought was always amusing because it would be like a quarter, and she lived all the way in California, so she would pay postage to send us a quarter. I'm like, the postage costs more than what you sent to us.
It's like three times the cost now.
Right. I loved getting them though. It's very, and she always had a nice, cute little note and everything like that. It was very nice. But we don't have a big enough Asian population that celebrates Lunar New Year in the area. So if there's
What,
anything
in
that
the
might be
northern
something out of
U.S.?
the university,
I don't see one.
well, look. I'm in Wisconsin. Not only are we largely a white state in where I live, but if I look outside, most of the country is currently white too, as in it's covered in snow.
Yes.
Yes, for anyone
Well,
that
you're
was going to
good.
mistake that for something else.
Yeah. You're gonna have to post pictures of your bow.
I have actually.
Well, I mean, this year.
Oh, well, I
This.
have actually.
Oh.
Because I've been experimenting. I've never been successfully able to make them before.
Okay. Well, technically you have a few days to get it right before you've missed your deadline.
That's right. That's right. It's interesting because all the recipes, they're very simple. You have some flour, you have some yeast, you have some water, and then they either put oil or shortening in it. And there's nothing else. There's no salt there or anything like that. There's no eggs. There's no milk. And it looks bowish, but it doesn't quite poof.
It's bow-ish, but not bow-like.
Yeah, it's bowish because it's like, yeah, okay, yeah, it's dough. Okay, holds something tasty, but it doesn't have that fluffiness that, chewy yet really fluffy, tender texture to it.
Don't quit your day job then.
Yeah, no, I definitely wouldn't be able to quit my day job to be an all-time bao baker
In Wisconsin.
in Wisconsin.
Anyway, didn't we do an interview a while back that we should probably actually, put up here?
Yeah, we are certifiable for not having to put this interview up already.
Yeah, it's pretty
You
bad. We did this
know what'd be
interview
really good,
on
Mark?
what?
We should make sure that we do this interview for the first episode of the year.
I hate to break it to you, Brian. We are.
No, that's ridiculous, because it's February. We would never have skipped a whole month.
Brian, you're rubbing it in, Brian. You're putting salt in my wound. Stop
Look,
it.
it's not my
Stop
fault.
it.
It's not my fault that I had such a hard time trying to get us together to record. I was going through withdrawal. It was so bad. I had to go co-host the
Wait,
Nerd Force
whoa.
podcast with John Graff just to get a fix.
To get your fix.
My podcasting fix.
Yes. No, I got that.
I don't know if you can see that, but I'm mainlining my microphone right in here.
Eighth inch jack right into the joint in your elbow.
Oh yeah, baby.
Okay.
That's good analog to digital transference. Oh yeah.
Analog to blood or something like that. So we have an interview that we did, what, 6 weeks ago?
In December.
Yeah. And this interview is with
Chris Berry.
And who is Chris Berry?
I believe we actually did the introduction as part
did
of the
we?
Interview.
Because that was like 6 weeks ago, so I don't remember. All right, let's roll this thing.
So we have a special guest today, Mark.
We do.
We
yes.
do.
Somebody who can hopefully make sense out of all the nonsense. The certifications are changing. I don't know what to make of it. I'm lost.
He will try his best.
Aren't you glad that we do this rehearsal thing? Yes, we have with us Chris Berry, a master technical instructor for Salesforce University. He's
wow.
a certified instructor. Instructor has been doing it for over 7 years. You may have seen Chris on some videos that were floating around the internet of a recorded Dev 401 course that he did.
Yeah, not those other videos. Other videos floating around the internet.
This is work-related.
Yeah.
And when I first started going to Dreamforce, Mark, Chris, for me, was Mr. Hands-On Training. You know, for a few years when I started going to those HOTS, I swear he was the instructor for like two out of the three HOTS I would go to at Dreamforce.
I probably have attended at least one and just don't remember through the haze of Dreamforce insanity.
I think if anyone has attended a HOT, he's probably been in there at one. I mean,
probably.
High probability. He's everywhere.
We were very well aligned, Brian.
I know. It was fun to heckle you after a couple of years. Chris, again?
You're easy to find with your hat, too. So
well,
I'd look out there, 200 people. Within about 2 seconds, I'd know if you're in the room.
Yeah. I wonder if he's going to take that off so everyone else can see. Yes.
There's always an empty seat behind you.
Yes, but I did take the hat off. I mean, it's rude for everyone else otherwise. So... Chris is joining us to talk about the changes that are going on within the certification program, specifically on the developer side. And before we really talk about the certifications themselves, I know a lot of people who are very proficient at using Salesforce as an admin or developer who aren't certified. So, Chris, can you talk to a little bit why people should get certified versus just being certifiable?
There's a few great advantages of getting a Salesforce certification. One of them is that it forces you to gain a comprehensive level of knowledge of Salesforce. So in order to get a certification, you're going to have to learn about capabilities and features that you might not have done, in the normal course of your job. And those things that you learn and those skills are going to come in handy down the road when you're trying to solve problems on Salesforce. It's a fantastic way to broadcast to your team and the entire market your capabilities. And I know that a lot of companies use certification when they're working with other people. They're looking for certified resources so they know that they have people who are going to be able to understand what they're talking about and know the best solution when to use it.
You got anything to add to that, Mark? You're shifting your eyes back and forth.
It's because I'm thinking, Brian. That's what happens. When my brain starts working, my eyes go on auto.
Am I
get anything?
Am I being too thoughtful for this?
No, I thought that was a great answer, Chris. You know,
what are you saying?
I think that's a lot better of an answer than what I usually hear. I mean, typically when I ask people, why should someone get certified? The answers I usually get is, well, certification is a sign of expertise. And so that expertise is going to help you go get jobs and so forth. And when I talk to some employers who are hiring admins or other admins, first off, a lot of people didn't even realize there were certifications out there for Salesforce as a hiring manager. And the second thing was people were like, well, I can show my expertise through other methods, why should I do that? But it's a great point that I love that you brought this up, that just because you've been an admin for many years doesn't mean you've covered the breadth of what's in Salesforce.
Absolutely. I mean, I know when you get an org, you are using what your company needs you to use, and you don't necessarily are looking into anything else. But I know when I was studying up for my 201, I was like, I'm never going to use approvals in territories. Why do I have to know how that intersects with sharing rules? Like, it's, but it does, you have to learn at some point because it may come up. You just never know. And it does help to broaden that spectrum of knowledge.
Exactly. Yeah. The people I often speak to in class, they have very deep knowledge on a few things. But when you take a look at their, you know, once we begin to venture outside of their comfort zone, there's a lot of features that they don't know to take advantage of.
So I don't know about you, Mark, but I'm Dev 401 certified.
I'm 201 and 401.
Oh, well, I'm 201 too, but we're, you know, we're talking developer okay. right now. So, you know.
Brian, you didn't just say that, did you? 401 certified?
Yeah, I'm 401 certified.
Oh, no. All right. So, Brian, uh-oh. You have the developer certification. Dev 401 is our course code. So, Dev 401 is the course code for the 5-day class that Salesforce University teaches both virtually and in person. Unfortunately, there's a lot of misunderstanding out there about the name of our certifications. So you are a certified developer, and Mark, I think you're a certified administrator. Is that right?
I have a developer and administrator.
We both do. Yes.
There we go. Not ADM 201 and 401. All right.
It's so common, though. Everybody just shorthands it to 201 and 401. Everybody.
Yeah. I'm an instructor, so I also play that schoolmaster role, and I correct everyone. So
well, watch your knuckles. Mastering your title.
I know my ruler is out.
All right. So I am a certified developer as well as a certified admin, and it's my understanding that the certified developer certification is going off into that dark night.
Yeah, it's. I would say eventually. So I don't want to cause any alarm. So one of the things that we have at Salesforce is a partner program. And so systems integrators are measured, and one of the measures is the number of developer certifications that the staff has. Because the partner team is different from the Salesforce University certification team, they have their own timelines, and so the certified developer will continue to exist because we need to support that purpose. So just understand that in the future, you know, down the road, the developer certification is planned to be retired. It's not something that's going to be in the immediate future, though.
So I almost said Dev 401 again. This is going to be a tough habit. So as a certified developer, I know there's a couple different avenues that I can go to update my certification on what the new way to do it.
I don't know anything. So
you can quote him on that.
Feel free to go from scratch.
Before you kind of talk about what the different avenues are, can you tell us why the change to begin with?
Yeah. About a year ago, the certification team at Salesforce decided to do a revamp of the developer track. So we have the certified developer and the certified advanced developer. And so the certification team identified a few weaknesses. And so what they identified is that, first off, in calling the force.com developer, it was a bit of a misnomer in the sense that it didn't involve any code whatsoever. You had to understand, you know, where to use things like Visual Force pages. But from an industry terminology standpoint, saying that you're a developer implied that you are also a coder or a programmer. And so that alignment was a little bit confusing for the marketplace. There's issues with the advanced developer. There was a huge leap when you went from developer to advanced developer. In fact, I know, and this was 7 years ago, when I took these tests, the you know, when I took that developer, I'm like, oh yeah, nailed it, got it. And when I took that advanced developer and I was about to hit that submit button, I was like, OMG, I hope I pass this thing. Because I'm the instructor. There's a certain, you know, certain expectation for folks like me.
No code or not very much code at all to all the code.
Exactly. So it was like the full bucket in order to get that advanced developer. And then the other thing was that the advanced developer had the manual programming assignment. And that simply wasn't scalable. In order to get those highly technical and frankly costly resources to be able to review those projects, it was a huge bottleneck in terms of trying to get as many people on board with that certification as possible. So for those are the main reasons, and probably a few other reasons, they decided to redo that track.
Yeah, I know when I was looking at getting certified, I wanted to go all the way up to advanced admin and advanced developer, but that leap between developer and then advanced developer was so huge. And then I heard tons of issues with people who would like take the written test and then wait months before they could do an assignment, and then wait even months to find out whether or not their assignment passed or failed them. It turned me off on trying to get to that advanced developer, since it was really not going to be used for anything else other than to show, yes, I do know what I'm doing. So how is the developer and advanced developer tracks being changed?
So there's a few things that we tried to solve. So what we did at a very basic level is we split up the developer and the advanced developer into two separate tracks. We have the new app builder track, and then there's the platform developer track. And basically, the way you can look at it is the app builder is the declarative capabilities, and the platform developer is more the programming, so your Visual Force pages and your Apex code. One of the things that we did was we focused those certs, or at least, you know, in doing this sort of this redo, we wanted to make it more about best practices. Since, you know, over the last 7 years, there's been a solidification in terms of, well, here's what, you know, rather than telling you what you are capable of doing, here's what you should do. So let's test on those kind of best practices. Obviously, over the last 6 to 7 years, there's been a whole ton of new features, and so we wanted to make sure our allocations were better. Those real-world roles that we talked about in terms of the terminology. And then what we wanted to do was, and this was a really big one, which was we wanted to remove the dependency for the programmers. So the people who write the Visual Force and the Apex, they're not necessarily going to be that person who's creating the workflow rules and the approval processes, and these days with Process Builder and so on and so forth. Now, they need to understand those capabilities, but we decided to not make them have the app builder be a prerequisite like it was with the developer and the advanced developer.
Okay. So if people are certified developers and they're pretty much focused on declarative work, they don't really write code, they should be steered towards the app builder certification, if I understand correctly.
Yeah. So I just realized you're trying to get me back to the question you asked originally.
It's that subtlety, that wizard subtlety.
So let me rephrase the last question in a different way. So our certified app builder is sort of, you know, I don't want to call it, I mean, you could kind of think of it as the new certified developer. There's definitely some key differences between the app builder and the certified developer. In reflecting on the marketplace, the certified developer didn't cover standard object functionality, which is a little bit, you know, sort of silly because, I would, you know, in my estimation, 2/3 of our customers are doing CRM oriented things. So we added standard object functionality into that new app builder. We added in, for the app builder, you'll see that there's going to be questions on when do I use declarative versus when do I use programmatic. The app builder is the person who's going to be doing that, you know, creating those workflow rules, all that kind of stuff. But they also need to understand where's the edge of that cliff where they need to say, okay, you know, this is the limit of what I'm able to do with, let's say, you know, process builder. Now I need to call that apex developer or programmer to create the solution at that point. There's also some, you know, like I said, the reallocation, some more on visual workflow and process builder. And then there's a little bit on Lightning components. I guess one of the big things is we also have, the app builder covers deployment, sandboxes, change sets. So those are things that, you know, we'd expect that app builder to be able to manage those processes that maybe the programmers are contributing to. So it's a different cert. It's an evolution in terms of both what I and we worked with a lot of our partners in order to design these new exams and what they were seeing in the marketplace and what we have seen in terms of the evolution of the use of Salesforce. Does that answer that question? And so the app builder, your dev still, you know, it's still valid, for a while. It will continue to be as long as you're, you know, taking those maintenance exams. But our plan down the road is the app builder is really where we want to ultimately steer folks.
Okay, so I'm a certified developer, and I know at some point I should probably go get the app builder, probably one of the platform developers too. Just, yeah, I should do it.
Right. You haven't already?
No. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons I have it was I wasn't even sure what was being covered on the app builder certification.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how much of the Lightning stuff that just came out, you know, like the Lightning builder and all that was in there. Because I played around with it, but I know I'm nowhere near what I would consider my level of requirement for an expertise as a knowledgeable person.
Yeah.
So I've been pushing that off until I can find some more information so I can get an idea of how much I know.
Yeah. So at certification.salesforce.com, we have a number of resources. But how about I email you a bunch of hyperlinks that you could then add to the Wizard website? Folks, after they watch this, they could go out there and just, you know, get that direct link to our different transitions exams that we have. So that's another thing, and you know, maybe that's your follow-up, or maybe I'll just start talking about it, but we have a bunch of transition exams for people who are currently holding the dev cert or the advanced developer cert.
So is the transition exams, how are they actually different than someone who's coming in brand new without the developer cert and getting that app builder or platform developer cert?
Yeah. So basically, the way to think of it is if you're coming in from, you know, you have no certifications with Salesforce, if you were to take the certified app builder, it's a 90-minute exam. It's going to have 60 questions, which is, you know, 90 seconds a question. And you're going to need to pass that test with a 63% score. Now, if you're like you and you already have that certified developer, then we have a transition exam. And the idea behind the transition exam is that it's only going to be 30 minutes. It's going to be 20 questions, which is, once again, 90 seconds a question. And it's going to focus solely on those key differences that I outlined. So things like standard objects, deployments, sandboxes, and so on, that are the delta or the difference between the developer and the app builder. So it's a lot easier, or at least I shouldn't say easier. It's a lot less time consuming. And then it's also cheaper because it's $100 versus if you're starting from scratch on the app builder, that costs $200.
So if I'm a certified developer, can I take a transition exam for both app builder and platform developer? Or is it won't do one or the other and you have to take the full test?
The developer essentially maps to the app builder, and so there's only a transition exam to take you from dev to app builder. In the case of Platform Developer 1, which is the programming stuff, there you're starting off on a new track in your case, and so you'd be starting from scratch.
No shortcut for you.
You know me, Mark. I'm lazy.
So okay. Well, here's another question. For someone like me, who is not very well versed in coding, I can read code. I can make some edits to code. I can, you know, add an if clause here. I can, you know, change the and then, et cetera, et cetera. It's just kind of writing from scratch. That's where I have all sorts of trouble. Yeah. Is the new platform developer track, mm-hmm. is the first level of that kind of a good entry, or do I need to make another two or three steps above that?
I can answer that. Let me answer that from both a, you know, how do you enable yourself from a skills standpoint? And then also, I'll start though with the, what would you do from a certification standpoint? And this is one of the key advantages of what we've done with the platform developer versus the, advanced developer, which is now you have the, ability to take the platform developer level one exam. There's no project that you need to submit for this. And on top of that, it is a subset of all of those programmatic capabilities that we have in Salesforce. And so it's going to be on, you know, things like, once again, it covers objects, whether standard or custom objects and fields and relationships. So you're probably all already very well-versed in that stuff. It also covers, you know, when to use declarative and programmatic. But from a programming standpoint, it covers Apex classes, our governor limits, SQL, which is our query language, modifying the database, our triggers. There's a number of things, you know, testing, and then it also covers Visual Force pages and basic Visual Force controllers. So it's not the entire, you know, bucket, if you will, that it used to be with the advanced developer. So sure. It's an easier entry point for folks who are on that side. Now, to answer your question from a, you know, you're one of those folks who, if you're given some code, you can make a few edits. You know, you borrow code from someone else and change a few things and can get that trigger to do something.
I know just enough to be dangerous.
Just
break all the governor limits.
Yeah, yeah. Just enough to produce emails that people have to.
Oh god! The horror.
Yeah.
So, single email message.
No, I'm talking about the ones when it blows up, and then the system administrators get the an exception occurred on line 54, that kind of stuff. So, we have. Well, first of all, let me just say there's Trailhead. So, Trailhead is seen an incredible, uptick and embrace by the community. In addition, we also have our ADM 231 course, which those of us in Salesforce University teach. And this is, it's basically the title says it all, which is Introduction to Object-Oriented Programming with Apex. So it's designed to be that course that takes someone who is that super admin and then teaches them the basics of object-oriented programming, where Apex is the programming language that we use. And so this is a tremendous resource. These are the two great resources. I would also recommend things like our workbooks. The workbooks, I have done our workbooks. Where you sign up for a developer edition account, which is not limited to developers. Anyone can do a developer edition account, and really play around and start to work on those things. But obviously, as someone from Salesforce University, we'd love to see you in our ADM 231 class, which is really mm-hmm. geared towards folks like you.
And I actually did take the introduction to object-oriented programming. Uh-huh. I can't remember my O's. I actually did take that course a few years ago, and it actually enable me to get this far. Without it, I would not have been able to, you know, read code or really function inside of it at all. So it was extremely valuable, but only got me about this far.
I gotcha. Okay. So now you want to, take it to the next level. All right. So the other course that we have, it's called Dev 450. And this is a course that we just released literally about 2 to 3 months ago. And so what we did was we took that Dev 501 course, which was solely on the topic of Apex, and we did a ground-up rewrite of that course. And really the key thing, this key kind of driver, was to align it with the platform developer level one topics. So this is a course that, you know, it's, we basically went through all the things in that study, you know, that study guide, and said, let's now include, those within this course. So, in this course, now that, you know, not having a great understanding of where you currently are, but this is our course that's geared towards folks who are either existing, you know, someone like a Java developer or a C# developer, or someone like yourself, you've taken ADM 231 and now you want the more rigorous course, which is going to talk more in terms of, you know, best practices and really taking it deeper from, you know, building out triggers and visual force pages and controllers and so on.
Test coverage.
You know, there's as an instructor, there's a few things that I know that people kind of cringe about, and yeah, governors and test coverage are the two that that are what people kind of the struggles. So, but that's what we do. So that's what we cover.
Mielcrest, I want to thank you very much for coming on today. It means a lot to me that you and I have kind of become friends in our wonderful run-ins at Dreamforce. If people want to reach out to you and have questions on certification or want to learn more about courses and Salesforce University in general, how should they reach out to you?
Well, there's a couple of ways. On Twitter, I'm Barryforce, so there's that. And then, you know, feel free to send me an email. So I think that would, maybe when I send you that email with the links, I'll also include my contact information. It's cberry@salesforce.com, and Barry is like Barry Manilow or Barry White with an A. That's a key part to, that's the one part that people seem to mix up. But yeah, email or Twitter. I'd be happy to try and respond or at least put you in contact with someone who can help you out.
Now it's time for our Salesforce video of the undetermined amount of time until the next one. And just to point something out, Brian, when I first said we should have this segment called undetermined amount of time until the next one, you were like, no, you should just do week or because we'll be doing these every week. It's been a month, Brian.
Yeah, it was, what, 3 episodes in before we're like, we can't do this every week?
Yeah, no.
Yes. But, you know, Mark, sometimes you just have to say no.
Indeed. Some people think it's a big thing.
And sometimes it's just a little thing.
Sometimes it's a crazy thing.
And sometimes it's not.
In this week's episode, we share a parody song from Apex and the Limits called Crazy Little Thing Called No. Mm-hmm. This one goes out to a little admin who's got troubles saying no.
We don't have
this thing called no. Well, I just gotta use it. Some of this thing called no. Well, I must get it out now. I am ready. Crazy little thing called no. This thing called no.
I thought I was very confused because there was a lot of different people in that video, yet I only heard two voices singing. I'm not sure how much they practiced in order to get all those people to sound exactly the same.
No, Brian, they have only two people actually record the song, and then the other people are just singing over
their
lip-syncing.
I clearly see people singing that.
It's called lip-syncing, Brian.
I don't know what that is.
Apparently not. Brian. Okay.
Yes.
Look. Here's the thing, Brian. Sometimes when people perform on stage, they're not actually singing the words. Sometimes the music is just playing and they're moving their mouth in time to match the words. That does actually happen sometimes. It's kind of like pro wrestling.
Pro wrestling's fake?
Now's a good time to do our outro.
WisterCast is produced by Brian Kwong and Mark Ross, directed by Brian Kwong and Mark Ross, technical administration by Brian Kwong and Mark Ross, script writing by Brian Kwong and Mark Ross, audio editing by Brian Kwong and Mark Ross, website maintenance by Brian Kwong and Mark Ross, eggnog nodding by Brian Kwong, and our intern this episode was Ryan Lorenzen.
Still waiting on our beverages, Brian. Come on.
Yeah. Hop to it.
Send us your interview suggestions, jokes, videos, tips, and feedback to wizardcast@thewizardnews.com or head over to thewizardnews.com and click Contact WizardCast.
Don't forget to subscribe to the WizardCast and receive our next episode automagically. Once again, I'm Brian.
And I'm Mark.
Thank you for listening. What's it like to the YouTube? Because now I want to bookmark that.
Well, yeah.
It's YouTube.com, well, Brian.
Yeah.
thank you, Mark. I never heard of these YouTubes.
Yeah. And it's Y-O-U.
I actually started typing Y-O-U.
No, I'm referring to...
Oh. And this has been our first episode of the year without Parker Harris.
Oh, thank God. Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you. It just didn't feel... I just couldn't...
It's like the itch. You just gotta scratch it.
Okay. I'm better now.